Today's daf in Besechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, is daf Yutet. We're holding right at the bottom of daf Yutchet Amud Beit, and we are continuing our quest for all of the things that need to be done before Shabbat, and you have to be careful not to do them on Shabbat. And remember, please, very important halacha. And that is that the structure, again, of this perek, especially the way the Rambam sees them all interrelated with the question of Hotzah, starting with the Yudches Dvorim, Shehu Shvu. Where in the Torah does it say to make sure that you have everything ready before Shabbos and that you don't carry on Shabbos? Hotzah. Remember, the Pasuk of Hotzah is you will not find it in the field. Nobody go out today to get it. Prepare before Shabbos. So get your man before Shabbos. That means you've got to get everything in your pockets, out of your pockets. That's ultimately boils down to Hilchata Rabta LeShabbata. And therefore, the makor of the idea is Hotzah. So all of these questions of being prepared for Shabbat are in the Torah in terms of Hotzah. Specifically, and therefore this is the perek which has the entire structure in terms of the various gezerot that fundamentally focus on issues of Hotzah or things that might look like you're doing something on Shabbos that is wrong. So we continue from that idea, make sure that you don't carry on Shabbos. We continue on to discuss Shabbos clocks, setting up your sprinkler system, giving something to a goy. Is a letter allowed to be in the door before Shabbos, and so on and so forth? These are the topics of our perek, and it holds together beautifully with the way that the Torah presents Shabbos to us. So today we begin with a related thing, and you'll remember there's only one other day that's called Shabbos, and that, of course, is Pesach. Mimochorat Shabbat. The same idea that we had about needing to make sure that you have to get things done before Shabbat is, guess where? Erev Pesach. The only place where the Torah says you got to make sure before Pesach that you've yishbitus army batechem. So before the nighttime comes, before the time for the Shritas HaPesach comes, you have to prepare your homes to be chometz-free zones. Now, the question is, we have a big machlokus about what is considered to be chometz-free zones. In other words, how much is that mechayev? Does it mean I need to clean out my house, or does it mean I actually have to get rid of the chometz from the world? That's a different question. If you hold that the chiyuv is specifically to get rid of the chometz from the world, then that would mean that as soon as there is a chalos of a chiyuv, rebbes don't yawn. As soon as there's a chalos of a chiyuv to get dealing with your Pesach, which is always shloshim yom before, which we learn out actually from Ramosim in the Pasuk, that's when we're shoyel in binyanei achag. So then at that point, according to Beit Shammai, you can't simply give somebody else your chometz unless you're sure that that chometz is going to be off of this planet by the time Pesach comes around. So you could either donate it to NASA if they were planning a trip to the moon, although I'm not really sure that that helps, or you could give it to a goy as long as he would probably eat it. But what if it's something that is eaten very slowly, like some kind of sharp dip that you could keep in your house for a whole month? Then you'd have to give it to him beforehand, because otherwise you wouldn't be sure that it would be finished. That brings us to the next related issue. Tana Rabbanan, three lines up from the bottom. Beit Shammai Omrim. We were talking about not selling things to a goy Erev Shabbos. The same thing is true, not selling your chometz to a nochri Erev Pesach, which we don't paskin like, obviously, because that is when we sell things to a nochri. Elohim ken yodea bo sheyechalek korem ha-Pesach, divrei Beit Shammai, you got to be sure it's gone. Beit Hillel omrim, kol zman shemutar le-ochro, mutar le-mochro. As long as you're allowed to eat it, this actually ends up meaning midiraisa, because actually you could sell the chometz even when it's also to eat, but it's mutar ba-na'ah. So, kozman shemutar le-ochlo, mutar le-mochro. Now, what if it's some kind of thing that lasts a long time? So, Rabbi Yudayim, a kutach habavli. So, the kutach is made out of bread that molds, and you put in all types of other milk stuff into it, and it's very sharp, and you can't eat a lot of it. So, any type of kutach cannot be sold within the 30 days, once it's already chiyev, to deal with your comments. Tana Rabbanan. Getting back to Erev Shabbos. Now, we had this question of things removed from your Chotzer Erev Shabbos. How about on Shabbos? Now, before Shabbos, everybody agreed that you cannot, even Beit Hillel agreed, you can't give things to a goy that he's going to take out of your Chotzer on Erev Shabbos, because then it looks like he's doing something for you. But how about giving something to eat? So let's say, normally we do not allow you to feed animals on Shabbos, unless they are your responsibility. So then at that point, it's not a tircha shelo letzorech, and you should take care of it. Dogs are a special case for two reasons. People generally don't care enough about dogs, at least in those days, because they would usually fend for themselves, going through the garbage and so on. So people didn't buy dog food. Therefore, if you see a hungry dog on Shabbos and it comes into your chatzar, even though it's not your dog, you're allowed to feed it in your chatzar. And if the dog takes the bone and goes out, that's okay. It does not look like you're being mechamer achar behemah. Everybody understands that you just gave the dog a bone. The other reason we give dogs a bone, obviously, is because it relates to Pesach. L'chol b'nei Yisrael lo yecharatz kelp. And Lishono, so they deserve special treatment of Hakaras Tova from Jews. Then there's also another halacha. You're allowed to give food to a goy on Shabbos, a poor goy, and if he takes it out, we don't care. Now, that's a big chiddush, because remember that according to even Beit Hillel, you're not allowed to give him something. You're not allowed to lend him, let's say, a cup, because when he takes it out, it looks like he's doing it as a shlichus of Yisrael. The point over here, Tosis explains, is that food is generally eaten in situ. So therefore, if the guy is hungry and you give him something to eat, he eats it. If he goes and he carries it out, so he'll go and carry out. That's his business. Why do we need two separate halachas, one for the goy and one for the kelev? Because you wouldn't have thought that you have the same chiyav to feed an intelligent human being who could take care of himself. And kamashmalan, there's no such thing. If the guy is poor and he doesn't have what to eat, since we have a mitzvah of mefarnasim aniyeh akum imaniyeh yisroel mipnei darkei shalom, so then you're mechuyav to take care of him, and that's considered to be a tircha le mitzvah, not a tircha shelo letzorech. Tana rabbanan. Lo yaskir adam kelav lenochri be'erev Shabbos, but be'revi'i u'b'chamishi mutar. So here we've got another problem. The problem here, we've been talking about whether a goy is going to take something out of the chutz. I understand that that could look like a problem, even according to Beis Hillel. And because of that, Beis Hillel says, get it out of my rishus before Shabbos. But what about if the guy is going to be using your kelim on Shabbos? Now, obviously, according to Beit Shammai, you're not allowed to have your kelim work on Shabbos, so that would be a problem. But the truth is that even Aliba de Beit Hillel, at least the way Tosfos understands it, this has nothing to do with Shvisas kelim, and it's going even Aliba de Beit Hillel. The problem over here is it looks like you are doing Shabbos business, and that you're renting out things specifically to make money from them on Shabbos, and therefore, it's problematic. So normally, we have a din of havlah. Havlah means that if you, let's say, you really would be renting your things, your lawnmower, let's say, to a goy, and he's going to be using your lawnmower on Shabbos, and he's paying you. So the idea of havlah is that if he pays me for a long period of time. So let's say he pays me for a couple of days, then it should be mutter, because it's not nikker that there's chayav Shabbos. Kamash malon this sugya, that if it's on Friday, that's not sufficient havla'a, because it looks like b'chol zot, that since he ought to be paying less if he weren't using the kli on Shabbos, and supposedly it's only for Friday, how come he's paying so much for one day? It must be that you're making money on Shabbos, so it's too nikker. So because of that, we said do it on Wednesday, Thursday, but do not actually have him rent things from you. There's another problem. The other problem is if some goy is working for you. So that's a different question of amir la'akam. You're not allowed to have him do work for you. So now the question is, can I post a letter? Or can I have Amazon make a delivery? So if the delivery would be made on Shabbos. So it looks like somebody is actually working for me on Shabbos. And because of that, we do not send letters on an Erev Shabbos, but we do send a letter on a Wednesday or a Thursday, because then he could be delivered on time. Some say Rabbi Yossi HaChosid. This seems to be the same person as the Gersa Rabbi Yossi HaKohen HaChosid. He refused to allow any paper signed by him or that could be identified as his to be in the hands of a goy, just in case that goy would start running around on Shabbos looking for the addressee. And it would look like Rabbi Yossi HaChosid sent this letter to be delivered on Shabbos. Tana Rabbona. Ein Mishalchen Igeret B'yad Nochri Erev Shabbat. Unless Ella im Kain Kotzeitz Lo Damim. Now, if the letter has a stamp on it, so in other words, there is a set fee for this letter, whatever it is. If I put on this stamp, it's up to you when it gets delivered. I'm not telling you deliver it by a particular time. I'm not paying you by the hour. I'm just putting it into the mailbox. So if I did that, so then the goy is doing his work for himself, because I didn't say that it has to be delivered on Shabbos. And everybody knows that this is kablanut. And so in the same way that we had before, that according to Beit Hillel, you're allowed to give even your clothes into the dry cleaners, or you're allowed to give orot la'abdan, there too we're going to have to understand, according to this braita, it means that you're not paying him by the hour, so that you give us a set price, a pair of pants costs such and such, at the dry cleaner. But according to Beit Shammai, obviously, if you're not allowed to give him something, even if he's not going to be using it, just because it looks like he's doing your shlichus and taking it out, kosher kain, it's not going to help to give him some kind of set fee, because it still looks like he's doing it for you. Now, Beit Shammai says, we said, that there needs to be enough time for the goy to be able to get home. In this case, home means home of the addressee before Shabbos. Beit Hillel says that he has to be able to get to the city of the addressee and where it's near the wall. Now, assuming that we're talking about the same case, meaning that I put a stamp on the letter and there's a set fee, who cares? I thought Beit Hillel says I can do it. Why all of a sudden does he start talking about it needs to get to the house in the city? He said beferish, he doesn't care. He doesn't care if the guy walks out of his house right before Shabbos. And as long as you were kotzeitz and there's a stamp on it, he doesn't care if the guy does it on Shabbos, because it's the guy's business. I didn't stipulate when he's supposed to deliver it. Rav Sheshi says, no, you misunderstood the braita. Obviously, this last piece is talking about where he did not have a set fee. So because of that, it looks like, indeed, he's really working for you, says Beit Shammai. Look, you can't send a letter unless he's going to reach the addressee before Shabbos. Ubeit Hillel Omrim, you don't have to literally reach the addressee. It just has to be in a house that was close to the wall. But in Achinami, if you would have put a stamp on it and there's a set fee, so then for sure there would be no problem. And even if it's right before Shabbos, it wouldn't be a problem. So that's how to understand it. Well, I'm sorry, I still don't understand. If you said you can't send it unless there is a fee, which is mashma that if there is no set fee, that you can't send it, period. You can't send it, even if he does have time. You didn't say you could send it if he has time to get to the nearest city. Mashma that since he's going to be working, you have to worry about how's it going to help you for him to get to the city? I mean, maybe it'll take him all day long. Remember that in those days, the concept of sending a letter is very similar to the idea of sending a telegram, 40, 50 years ago. With the kid on the telegram, on the bicycle, is going to look for you all day until he finds you and delivers that telegram. That's what a letter was. So in that case, if you're not allowed to do that, how does it help all of a sudden here to say, the way you're learning, that we're talking about there was no set fee, and all of a sudden it's still okay, as long as he can get to the wall of the city where the guy lives, doesn't make any sense. And it does make sense, because there's two different situations, and that accounts for two different halachas. If there is a postal system, so a postal system means that when the guy that is delivering This is the way the Rambam learns. Beit Doar, the Rambam learns, means a post office. Rashi learns Beit Doar means a general authority office, which also handles letters. According to the Rambam, it's literally the word post office, which is why in modern Hebrew, the word for post office is this Gemara, Doar, Beit Doar. Exactly. So there, the Goy does not have to be Toreach. Why? Because his responsibility is only to bring it to the post office that has their own delivery service. And therefore, when he gets close to the wall, there's always going to be a box, a postal box, which will be collected by the post office, and he'll just put it in there. He doesn't have to start looking around in town. So if he's close enough to the city, that's good enough. So hada kaviya bedoar b'mata, and hada lo kaviya bedoar b'mata. It basically, if there is no post office, and you didn't set up a feast, then eino chinami. You couldn't send it at all. That was the mashmaut that we had before. Tana rabbanan, we have also a din that has some connection here to the issue of Shabbos. And that, again, as we're understanding here, hachana for Shabbos is a function of hotzah, specifically. Therefore, all of the dinim in this perek that concern preparing for Shabbos and being aware of the implications of Shabbos are part of Maaseh Bereishis of the bracha for Shabbos, which is lechem mishnah, which is given not to go out and collect the man on Shabbos, as it said, which is the makor of the yisra of hotzah, not to mention the malachas that you would be doing with the man. Doku and so on, which is also part of this parak, as we're going to see. It's all about dicha coming up. We already saw that in our Mishnah. But there are times when you have to worry about it way before Shabbos. So suppose you're going to be doing so. This is where the Rif understands the sugya coming up. Suppose you're going to be doing something that is going to make your Shabbos miserable. Namely, you're going on a trip. And this trip is a cruise ship. Now, as you know, everyone on cruise ships ends up getting quarantined for like 3 months, and then you're trying to make your Shabbos. No, that wasn't the issue. The issue in those days were that if you got on a cruise ship within 3 days before Shabbos, according to the Rif, you'll be seasick on Shabbos. And because it takes 3 days to recover from your initial seasickness. So therefore, we give you 3 days in which you got to get used to traveling, and then you can be on the boat for Shabbos. Okay, there's many other pshatim, a lot of pshatim here. The Mishnah Berurah actually brings all of the pshatim. Whether there's a problem of tchumim early on because you're close to the, along the shore, you're close to the ground, or whether there's an isser of shot, which is a gezerah, not to be going on the water because maybe you'll come to be mitaken klishayit, which is the way Tosfos understands, or others understand it because it looks like in case there's an emergency, it looks like you set things up. This is the Baal HaMor. You set things up to be in a position where you may have to be Mechalel Shabbos in order to be able to save lives on Shabbos and so on. Okay, many, many different pshatim. The actual tremendous nafkamina is that according to the Rif, if you're on the type of boat that you don't get seasick on, so in other words, there are sort of cruise ships in which the boat is so large and it's in the time of the year where you don't have storms and so on, so then there wouldn't be this iser. So that would make a tremendous nafkamina lalocha. But over here, says the Brai, so you do not start a sea trip less than 3 days before Shabbos. But b'med dvarim amurim, this is only where you're going for a vacation. But if you're going for a dvar mitzvah, then you'd be allowed to. Because, I mean, after all, the entire thing is, you know, a gezerah about you're not going to enjoy your Shabbos so much. Okay, for a dvar mitzvah, you won't enjoy your Shabbos. According to Rif, this thing works out very well. According to the others, it's not so posh. I mean, so why would it be mutter? Now, what he has to do is he has to say to the captain that as Jews, you know, you have to dock for Shabbos. You know, we can't be traveling on Shabbos. And the guy says, of course, naturally, I'm very careful about my Jewish customers. And then he says, what are you, crazy? And he obviously he does not dock. But you have to tell him that he should be shoveit. At least it should look good. Fine. Reb Shimon Gamliel Omer, if it's the kind of short trip, like from Tzur to Tzidon, and Tzur to Tzidon, Tzidon was very important to go to on Erev Shabbos because it was the business area of Tzor, you went with a ferry, and the main day of doing business, international trade, was on Friday. They used to have a fair, a shuk, every Friday. So obviously, You're telling me all those diamond dealers over there in Tsur are not going to go to Tzidon. Ask the Rebbe whether they'll manage to figure out a way to get there on Erev Shabbos. They'll get there. We'll get there on Erev Shabbos. It's good. It's good. So because of that, it's something that is always done in the course of a day that you can do even on Erev Shabbos because it's not going to ruin your Shabbos. But by the way, you should just know that there is a minhag that's brought to halacha, and many people are still makbid on it, not to go on a trip Erev Shabbos at all because of the fact that if something breaks down, then your Shabbos is wrecked. And you need to have time to prepare for Shabbos, and therefore to take a trip and to pull it to somebody's house before Shabbos or to pull it to your house thinking it's poshut, everything is so easy to do, the minhag is not to do that. Instead, dedicate your Erev Shabbos to Hachana for Shabbos. Tana Rabbanan, Ein Tzarin Alay Yerot Shanachrim Pachot B'Shalosh Yamim Kodem HaShabbos. Over here, we have the same achlokasin of many of the major shitas that we had before. Why can you not start a siege within 3 days? So again, according to the Rif, it's the same reason. It'll wreck your Shabbos because the first 3 days of the siege, it's very tense for the soldiers that are at war. They don't know how it's gonna work out. They're gonna try to break out. So it'll kill your Shabbos. According to the other shittas that we spoke about, it could because it'll be Gurim, Chilol Shabbos, because the army is gonna require Chilol Shabbos and so on and so forth. But if you started, then Ein Mafsikim, some learn even if it was started Be'isr, you don't stop a siege, even if it was done wrong. Pashtus is, once you start, you finish. Why does the Torah say specifically, Ad Ridata, in terms of the mitzvah of being careful not to be mashkit etzim? So it said, you know, rak etz asher yadata ki lo etz ma'achali, oto karata, and then it says, and you keep fighting Ad Ridata. Why throw in Ad Ridata? Obviously, what would we think? We're pulling a siege just for a trial? So the point is, Ad Ridata means afilu b'shabbat. So even though there would be no sakona involved in putting off the war effort for a day and taking a day off, Ad Ridata. So they used to give white clothing in 3 days before Shabbos. And the 3 days before Shabbos, says Rabbi Tzadok, yes, that indeed was the minhag of Beis Rabbi Gamliel. But colored clothing, which are much easier to clean because you put it in a lower temperature and it doesn't show the dirt, that you're allowed to give into the cleaners even on Erev Shabbos because it's much harder to clean white clothes than colored clothes. So usually Abaye had like white clothes. You know, I mean, who would wear colored clothing in those days? What, a black suit, chas v'shalom. So therefore, he always knew what the prices were. One day, Abaye got himself this beautiful Hawaiian shirt, you know. So he brought it in to the dry cleaners. He says, how much does it cost for this? Nothing to do with Shabbos. He said, what's the price on these colored shirts? So the guy said to him, what do you mean, what's the price? You know what the price is. It's the same as your white shirts. It's the same thing. Says Abaye, oh, too late for that shtick, man. Kvar katmucha rabbanan. The rabbanan in the Gemara already taught me that that's not true. So I'm not going to pay the same price I would pay for white. By the way, says Abaye, if you're giving clothes into a dry cleaner, don't be stupid. Bring along a measuring tape. Measure your suit when you bring it in, and measure your suit when you take it back. Because I can tell you right now, if the measurement when it comes back is longer than it was before, then the guy obviously stretched your sweater and killed it. And if it's shorter than it was before, then he must have boiled the sweater and he shrunk it, which is probably why the word for a laundry is a katsra. It always makes things short. Anyway, getting back now to the Mishnah. So he had this funny halach at the end, which wasn't clear to us why it's true, that everybody is meida, even Beit Shammai or meida, that in the case where you are tayanim the Beit Abadiyos, you're allowed to put on the extra wood, whether it's on the olives or whether it's on the grapes, even though that is going to be continuing to put pressure on them and will squeeze them on Shabbos. Now, how come everything else, Beit Shammai says, no, you can't start doing a malach if that malach is going to be continued to be done? Why? Because of Shvitat Kelim. Why over here with very active Shvitat Kelim? Why all of a sudden in all of the other cases Gazru buhu bechamai bechamai was gozer. Umashna korat betabad vigula betabad de lo gazru. It doesn't make sense. Now, very important diak here, by the way. Shammai was never gozer. What do you mean gozru? Didn't we say before that according to Shammai, it's a diuraisa because you learned it out of the pasuk of the extra word where we already spoke about your shivcha, your eved, your behema. So we said that's l'rabbis, specifically shvizas kelim. So what is the extra call for if not shvizas kelim? That's not a gezerah. So there are many rishonim or a medayik from here that when Beit Shammai asserts shvizas kelim, the deraisa of shvizas kelim was indeed only the kelim that are active. Remember, we spoke about three levels of activity, levizavish shvitas kelim, when we were talking about the difference between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel in terms of shvitat kelim. So from here, some are medayik, that even Beit Shammai really didn't aser the deraisa all shvizas kelim, only active shvizas kelim. It's like either the level of cooking or the level of the trapping, which is real total activity, and the rest was a gezerah. So how come on all of the other cases we said you can't do it, either deraisa or gezerah, and how come this thing you're allowed to do, which if you did it on Shabbos, wouldn't you be chayav achatas? Says the Gemara, no. Because since we're talking about over here, the grapes and olives that were already crushed before Shabbos, so Hanach, the Avidlu Bishabbat, B'chayev Chatas, the cases in the Mishnah, where if you would have done it on Shabbos, you would have been Chayev Chatas there, Beit Shammai was Gozer, Erev Shabbos, you can't do it because it'll keep doing it on Shabbos, which we thus Kalim. Mash Einkin, Korot Beit Abad, and Igulei Hagat, where even if you would have done it on Shabbos, you would not be Chayev Chatas because it was already considered to be broken apart, the liquid from the solid, over there, lo gozer. By the way, who is the Tana that holds that? That once something has begun leaking out, that it's considered, the rest of it is not considered to be shrita. And it's as if it came out on its own, even though you are adding additional pressure, because we're saying over here, if you would have pressed on it with your hand, if it was already broken apart before Shabbos, you wouldn't be over an Isser, and therefore we allow your peros, your kalim, to do the same thing to these peros. Who is that, Manyom? It's going Aliva the Rabbi Yishmael. Because we have a Mishnah in Idyas that says that if before Shabbos you took garlic or boser, a very early stage growth of grapes, which people would actually squeeze even though they don't have wine grape juice in them, but you get a very sharp, tangy liquid out of them, which is good for using as a salad dressing, and mililot, the same thing was true of grain that hasn't fully ripened, they would squeeze it to get a tangy liquid. If you were rosik them, so if you actually chopped them up on Friday, so then Rabbi Yishmael says it's okay, you can continue to allow it to come out on Shabbos, and that's not a problem. Rabbi Akiva says that you cannot finish it because you're not allowed to, which is like in our Mishnah, you were not allowed to put something heavy on it to make it continue squeezing after Shabbos. So that would mean that this is not going like Rabbi Akiva. Whereas Rabbi Elazar, he says that Rabbi Elazar is the author of the Mishnah. Obviously, Rabbi Elazar means here the Amora, Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat says that our Mishnah is going according to the Tana, Rabbi Elazar ben Shomua. And where do we see that? We see that by honeycomb. And that's a chalot dvat, shirizkan be'erev Shabbos, v'yatzu mi'atzman. We have another case of squeezing. And that case is honeycombs, where you take the wax that contains the honey inside of it, and if you broke them up before Shabbos, and now they continue to come out, the honey continues to come out on Shabbos. So the Tanakhama says it's also, you're not allowed to eat that honey on Shabbos because we're afraid that you're going to actually squeeze some and that would be usher. Whereas Rabbi Elazar says it's not usher because even if you squeeze it, it would be mutter for the same reason. Once you already broke up the honeycomb, then the honey is considered to be broken out. So how come Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Hanina didn't say that it's going according to the Tana of the Mishnah. I mean, there's a Mishnah, a Beferish Mishnah. Wouldn't that be something that it would be better to bring than from a Braisa? No, because Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina would say that has nothing to do with it. Why not? Because honey is different. Honey is considered to be a food even when it's out of the honeycomb. It's not considered to be a liquid. It's actually, we look at it as if it's a food. It's a solid food. So therefore, it's considered to be the same as it was before. So over there, we have something that's initially an oichlin, and at the end, it's an oichlin. Now, others disagree with this, Rashi, and since others disagree that and it's considered to be a liquid-type food, but it doesn't change because when it was in the comb itself, it was also a liquid. It was just contained in these little wax containers. That's how they understand it. So it's not considered really to be a normal case of schita. Mashenkin over here, mikora ochava hashta mashka. Before, it was part of the olive, or it was part of the grape. It was not recognizably a liquid. And now you chop it up, now it becomes a liquid. How do you know that that's considered to be mutter, and that that's not much more chomer in terms of schita? Whereas the Rebbe Elazar, the Amora, Rebbe Elazar says, no, I still think it's like honey. What does he say? He says, it's wrong to say that Rabbi Elazar, the Tana, was referring specifically to honeycombs, because I can show you a brayta that Rabbi Elazar was mater even zeisim v'anovim, and that's exactly like the case of the Mishnah. Daki Asar Rav Hoshaya min Narda. He came from Narda bringing a brayta, and the brayta read like this, that if you chopped up zeitim v'anovim, so you got olives or grapes, you chop them up Erev Shabbos, and the liquid is going out of them all by itself on Shabbos, the Tanakhama says it's Osir, and here also Rabbi Elazar is Matir, exactly the same as the honeycomb. He, together with Rabbi Shimon, was Matir. So why did Rabbi Chanina say it was only for honeycombs? Because he didn't know that Braisa. Look, not everybody knows every Braisa. So if you have something in a Mishnah, you can ask, how come he didn't bring a Raya from the Mishnah? You can't ask, how come he didn't have the Braisa? No, you don't know the Braisa. So Rabbi Chanina, Braita lo shmialu. Okay, Rabbi Elazar, why didn't Rabbi Elazar want to say, like Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, that the Tana is Rabbi Yishmael? Because it says Beferish, Rabbi Yishmael basically said the same thing. Omar Lach, Rabbi Elazar says, because did we not learn as far the Mishnah over there that quoted Rabbi Yishmael, that Rabbi Bar Chanina says, like that Rabbi Yochanan explained that it depends what stage we're talking about. And again, over here we have a remez to the Mun, which is dicha. Dicha is the word that the Torah uses for preparation of the man. So, bimechusarim dicha dekulei amalo plige. If it was never banged on, you never pounded on it, right? And that comes after the risuk. We talked before about riska. Riska means they were chopped up, they were cut up. After that, you don't just leave them, you also bang on them. And then you can go further than that. You can grind them up to little pieces or mash them with a hammer. That's called to be shochek. Okay, so there's three stages. So what we said over there was, if it was riskan, which is stage A, and there was no dicha, so we taina that if it was talking about there was no dicha, everybody is made that it's usher. The question between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva was not similar to this case. It was talking about where they were mechusar shechika, which is the last stage. That's where they argue. So, and these cases in our Mishnah are talking about that they're mechusar dicha, because all it says is that they were basically, went through a chopping process. Where does it say that they were pressed? They weren't actually pounded on. They were just pressed with the wood. Lamaisa, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, halacha lamaisa paskin, and did an act lamaisa like Rabbi Yishmael to allow it on Shabbos. Okay, now getting on, once we're talking, this is very much a agav, it's just a little perk that you get for learning about these dinim, and it turns out that there was also a perk that was given to people who work in the olive presses, and that was that the leftover oil, which was often found in the corner where they didn't come out right away, all of that oil was given as a tip to the workers, and that was one of their perks. So were the machatzalot, which are these basket mats that were used to cover the olives. At the end of the pressing, they're allowed to take them home, keep them for themselves. So the question is, what is the din of those things vis-a-vis muktzah? Now, you should know, we're going to see later on, actually, we paskin like Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold of muktzah. Rabbi Yehuda is the one who holds of muktzah. And even not holding of muktzah, as you can see, we've got quite a bit of muktzah. Imagine if we held of Rabbi Yehuda. So anyway, according to Rabbi Yehuda, these things would be usher because they are muktzah in the sense of being set aside for business purposes. So in other words, that oil, that's a tip to my worker. And that mat, that's a tip to my worker. So because of that, I wouldn't be allowed to move them on Shabbos. So that shemen of the badadim that belongs to the people that work in the bad, that's a badad, and the machatzalot, which are these mats that you use to cover up the olives, that also goes as a tip to the badadim. Because of that, Rav Asher is moving them on Shabbos, and Shmuel was matir. This is part of the machlokas, same as whether we paskel like Rabbi Shimon or Rabbi Yehuda. You have a similar machlokas legabe karache dezuzeh. Karache dezuzeh are also mats, but they're folded in the middle. You could store them easily. You put them up against the side of the cargo in the ship. And when things are getting wet and there's water dripping from the decks, they would take this out, and then they would spread it apart, and it was folded in the middle, spread it apart, and they would cover the cargo to prevent it from getting wrecked by the dripping from the underside of the deck. So those are called karake dezuzi. I mean, dezuzi means they're pairs, like zugi. So they're paired by befolded. So Rav Asher, same thing. Rav Asher said because it's part of business. And Shmuel is matred. Omer of Nachman. We have also Benogea, the dinim of muktzah. If you have an animal on Yontiv that was set aside for purposes other than eating, so then it's not considered to be muchan, it's muktzah for the Yontiv. Remember, anything that's muktzah at the beginning of a Shabbos or the beginning of the Yontiv remains muktzah the entire day. Therefore, says Reb Nachman, if you have a goat and you keep this goat not to eat the goat, but rather to drink its milk, you have a sheep and you keep the sheep in order to get shearings from it, not to eat it. You have a tarnagolet that you keep not to have some chicken for Shabbos, but to have fresh eggs every day. And you've got the shvarim, turim, that you use not to have steak, but to have a plow that is working. And you have tamrei deiska, you have dates that were picked specifically to take and market them in the market and not to eat. Then you decide in the middle of the day, it's yontiv, you'd like to have actually a steak, or you'd like to use those dates for yourself. According to Rav, that's usher because it was already muktzah. And according to Shmuel, it's mutter. Now, all of these machlokasin are a function of the machlokas of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Whether we hold a muktzah, we don't hold a muktzah, that's the very broad, it's Rabbi Shimon, let lay muktzah. Obviously, there's a heck of a lot of muktzah that eat lay, but those are considered to be unique cases, which we are the way we relate to muktzah. I'll leave it to Rabbi Shimon. Now, there was a certain Talmud who was Ori b'charta the Argis k'Rabbi Shimon. He was in this town of Charta that was made by a rich guy called Argis. So he was makel there, and Rav Hamnuna put him into nidui because he paskin like Rabbi Shimon. What do you mean? What's wrong with passing like Rabbi Shimon? He owns like Rabbi Shimon. No. Because Charti the Argus was within the general area where Rav was the Rosh Hashiva. So even though Rav wasn't present, he shouldn't have said that something was mutter, I'll leave it to Rabbi Shimon, in an area that generally took the psak halacha of Rav. And we just had all these examples where Rav dafka paskin l'chumra when it came to muktzah like Rabbi Yehuda. We have another similar maisa where Talmidim made a determination about who to go. According to the retreat Talmidim, and they were in a fire on Shabbos. The house caught fire. So it's a big machlokas where a house catches fire because the Rabbanim made a special gezerah. Even though bepashtus, there should be no problem in bringing out everything that you want, as long as you're not carrying. You bring it out to the chotzer, it's not muktz or whatever. But the Rabbanim made a gezerah that because of the fact that once you let people go, and they're in a position of being what's called, again, a technical term, bohul al mamonam. Bohul al mamonam means you lose control of your psychology when you are losing it. And that's called losing it. So you're losing your money, you're losing it. Because of that, the Rabbanan gave very specific amounts that you're allowed to save. And over there, there's a big machlokas about the difference between taking out a lot of things in one container or fewer things in smaller containers. So it's a big machlokas over there between Rabba Bar Zavda and Rav Huna. Now, exactly how to learn the difference over here, the easiest way is to understand it. I'll leave the Rabbeinu Tam. There were two general approaches. Rashi's approach is more complex. We'll just take the Tosis over here because, again, we're giving just a brief overview. And the idea over there was there might be a difference about there was a stira over there. In one place it says you can take out, in one place it says you can't. Machlokas between Rav Huna and Rabba Bar Zavda, whether the difference between them was the difference of whether you're taking it out into the same chatzar that you live or whether you're taking it out into another chatzar. And there's another approach in which it depends if you're taking out one large kli. So even if you have 100 sudas, if you're just taking out that kli, so take out that kli, or taking it out in separate kelim. So one of them was paskening that it's a function of going into the same chatzar, and therefore it was matzil even 4 or 5 separate kelim because he brought them into the same chatzar. And one was matzil only a lot of things, but only because it was in one container. And so because of that, one was paskening basically the way Rav Huna understood it, and one which was different containers, that's Rav Huna, and the other one was paskening like Rabba Bar Zavda, that depends what chatzar.